it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
As so often is the case, maybe on a Monday more so than other days, I'm literally plugging the headphones in right now, and I'm hoping that the volume is not super super high. Hi, Sue. How are you?
Now, sorry, that's my fault. Fine, thank you.
What it was, but I couldn't plug my headphones in today. I've only done it for like every day of my life, and it was a challenge. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to what I would say is going to be the first official fall feeling type week, because this is our last day of temperatures that are warm. And, you know, we've been kind of complaining because we like our sweatshirt weather. And then in a couple of weeks, we'll be saying, oh, my God, it's so cold. Right. I can't stand it anymore.
I looked at the extended forecast. Don't tell Dave Murray on my phone. And it looked like the 80s were back like next week or in some days.
OK, well, he's going to join us. One thing I did notice is like low temperatures now, maybe into the 40s. So that's
significant for real
as we get closer here to Halloween. But yeah, we'll have Dave on. Actually, I think he's set up for a little after 4 o'clock. Right, Fred?
Yeah. Right.
Before Sue's news. So there's a lot of stuff to cover, including some things that happened in Chicago over the weekend. This Barry Weiss story with CBS News, I alluded to it and talked about it a little bit last week. It's huge. It really is. And she wrote a great column today in the Free Press about what really kind of happens next. And if you're not familiar with that story, Paramount has purchased the Free Press. Barry used to be at the New York Times, decided that it was a rag not worthy of really doing real journalism, started the Free Press, was really successful. They bought it. The number that I heard was between 100 and 200 million. They settled in the middle as 150 million. But that's not the part of the story that's interesting. What's part of the story that's interesting is she's now been given the position of editor-in-chief of CBS News. And that means 60 Minutes. And that means the, CBS Sunday morning show and the Saturday morning show and all these things that CBS does to mainly sway the news and lie to people. It's something funny. There's things that are going on right now on social media because you got full panic mode over at CBS News. They don't know exactly what's going to happen and what Barry's going to do. And, you know, somebody said CBS News veterans I've talked to are encouraging Barry Weiss to not mess with the golden goose is of 60 Minutes and CBS News Sunday morning. We'll see what happens. My response was, actually, you should start with 60 Minutes. It should be the opposite of that. I like the Sunday morning show. I think the Sunday morning show is actually maybe the best thing that CBS does.
CBS Sunday morning or the one? Yeah,
totally CBS Sunday morning.
Because so, it's softer, more featurey.
Well, yeah,
I think so, yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's the best show that they have. To me, it's the only watchable show. But, I mean, you better start with 60 Minutes because their reporting has been BS. There's no way you can trust it if you live in St. Louis because we know that Bill Whitaker came here and lied. And Jeff Pegues, another former CBS correspondent, did the same thing. We're all racist because we wanted Kim Gardner, who was doing a ridiculously awful and dangerous job at the circuit attorney's office. So it's nuts. But that's a big story. We're going to cover it from a variety of perspectives. We have Batya Unger-Sargon coming up here in just a couple of minutes. I know that she's going to have some opinions on that. She's a new TV star now, right, Fred?
Yeah.
She got a show at News Nation. You know, everyone's getting shows. Jenny's got a show. Botch's got a show. I guess I already have a
show.
You
have a show.
That's true.
Yes.
All right. I guess I can't complain too much. Yeah. But man, I don't have a TV show.
Well, that's
not anymore.
True.
I want a TV. I'm going to tell Botch I want one of those.
That'll go well.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to help me at all. Ilya Shapiro will be here this afternoon. He is our constitutional law expert. There's a bunch of stuff going on with that, including a new session of the court beginning this week. You have the. I think this may have come down late on Friday, the sentence for the suspect in the assassination of Justice Kavanaugh, who was a man
attempted.
Until, right, sorry, right. did I say attempted? But that person was a man, but now has decided that he's a woman, so all of the news outlets started describing the person as she. And that's just part of the ridiculous nature of that particular story. We got Cusimano this afternoon. Hey, it was a hell of a sports weekend, Ethan. The football, the NFL scores, even college, because there were a bunch of teams that went down in college football. Penn State, I think, dropped out of the top 25.
And Texas.
Texas did too?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. Now, it makes me a little nervous. Like, Mizzou moved up four or five spots, even though they didn't play. I don't like that. But you have a better, I think they're at like 14.
That's how chaotic it was.
No, I
that
know.
They didn't even play, and they moved up from 20 to 14.
Yeah.
They should keep not playing.
Right. Fred, I like that strategy. Exactly. Yeah. We might make the playoff that way. But they have Alabama in Columbia this weekend, and that is going to be a huge, huge game. So we'll talk about that. We'll have Cusimano this afternoon and a bunch of other stuff as we lead into Audio Cut of the Day. Now, I just have to share this story because I don't remember if I said anything. Sue, did I say anything on the air on Friday about my dog, about Olaf, my little dog?
No, not on the air.
I don't think I did. You guys knew I was worried because what had happened was, and Ethan, you knew that I was very panicked because when I left the show on Friday, just a little background here. So, you know, I have the puppy Max, who's now 6 months old. He's been doing great. My little dog, we lost that dog, Duke, earlier this year, and he had his second obstruction. He had a very expensive surgery last year, and then we just, you know, just couldn't do it again. It was very sad, and he was not that old. He was just 6 years old. So we get the puppy in June, and, you know, you have your various bouts as a dog owner, you know, Sue, with puppy nervous stomach and all this stuff, and, you know, you kind of get used to some accidents
you
and
do.
Things like that. But last Wednesday, I noticed that there was something going on when I would wake up. There was a little bit, I'm going to try to keep this as non-gross as I possibly can, but there was a bit of a deposit that was made in the area off the kitchen. And at this point, I'm like, well, sometimes I get confused because, you know, I have a lot of animals. I have three cats and two dogs and the bunny. I could rule the bunny out because the bunny has very particular pellets that do never change, really. They just stay the same.
It's a breed issue.
Yeah, exactly. So at first, I'm trying to figure out, wait a second, is this Olaf? I knew it wasn't Max. The size was the indicator there. Is this one of the cats or Olaf? Well, then by Thursday, I start to realize that it's Olaf. And I'm not one to, just because I've done this before, to rush my animals into the vet at the very first sign of some distress, because sometimes these things do clear up. But it became increasingly clear on Friday, and by Friday morning, that he was really, really not doing well. And I didn't have time to bring him to the vet on Friday.
Yeah.
So I made an appointment on Monday at 9 a.m., which would be today. But I was getting reports. And what was happening when I was getting ready for work on Friday is, and Sue, every half hour, I'd have to let him out. He was struggling. And then there was more and more blood that was melted. And then he started vomiting, and there was bile. So I left here on Friday. Ethan, I said, man, I don't feel very good about the way this is going to turn out. He's a 12-year-old dog, and, you know, there are limitations, unfortunately. So I get home. He's not doing very well. My wife's out of town. Alexa and I, we go to the vet clinic, the ER clinic. It's the one that's over by 141 in Manchester. We had taken Duke there. And by the way, anything I say from here on out is not a criticism of this place. They were awesome. They do great work over there. But it's like an ER for humans. They even have a sign that says, look, we're going to treat, you know, the animals that are in a more of a life-threatening situation
first
before the others. So unfortunately, we're in there for, like, you know, a couple hours in the waiting room. The doctor comes in. He was great. So I'm thinking, this is it. I got to tell my daughter. And by the way, when we were in that little waiting room, he's letting go more of his bowels. Mm-hmm. And it's just, there was so much blood, I couldn't believe it. I'm like, this poor little dog, he's suffering. I'm so glad that we brought him in at this point. So the doctor comes in, starts feeling around, stuff like that. And he's not too worried about it. I'm like, oh, okay. So he doesn't even want to do x-rays. I'm like, okay. Well, he's, you know, he reaches inside his mouth. He's like very dehydrated. I'm like, yeah, I can understand that. Let's get him some fluids, and I'll take him from here, and I'll call you tonight. This was about 9:30, I think I leave. And I'll call you tonight with an update. So I go home. He calls me at 11:45. It's like, well, he's doing pretty well. He hasn't done anything since you left, yada, yada, yada. We'll call you in the morning. You know, we'll keep him overnight just to make sure. And by the time I wake up on Saturday morning, which is about 7:30, I have another message from the vet clinic, and I'm worried at this point. I see the call coming.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow. Because he even said to me on Friday night, the guy's like, hey, if you don't hear from us by 11 o'clock, that's not unusual. We're really busy. I'm like, oh, okay. So they leave a message. I'm thinking, bad news. Oh, no, he's fine. You can come get him whenever you want. So
love that.
Becky goes up there, gets him. He has been perfectly fine the entire weekend. Yeah. I mean, I was right in the obit. I'm just going to tell you right now, and I texted you guys on Friday night or Saturday morning because I was so shocked that it was something. And I guess the diagnosis, that would be the question you would have, right? Like, what was it?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be the basic question? It's something like, let me just look here what they wrote down. Oh, by the way, this is my favorite part. And like I said, I'm not criticizing the vet place because I understand.
Well, there's no need
but
to.
I know, but what I wanted to tell you was, $1,100 later, I find out that, oh, he's fine. That's the part I had to mention.
Now,
again, vet clinic, emergency vet. I understand all these things. I do. But it's like, wait a second. Like, because there's a part of you then that says, if I would have waited till tomorrow morning and not brought him in, I have $1,100 more in my pocket?
Right, but he was dehydrated.
I understand.
So they had to give him fluids.
They
did. Okay,
gotcha.
Well,
okay.
Also, it's a good thing. I'd rather spend $1,100, have him back and just fine than
alternative.
Well, I understand that. It says suspect gastroenteritis, right? Yeah, and Fred, you say that, and that's fine, but you know what Fred's line was to me on Friday night?
Oh,
I'm just going to tell people what you said, because I got to go find this text, because we've had a lot of texts. I wouldn't want you as my doctor. You'd have me dead when I was just thirsty. That was a great line, by the way.
Thanks.
And it's true. I mean, you've summed it up quite well there, Fred. Anyway, good news for Olaf. He's had, like, when he was younger, he had torn ACL. And do you remember this at all, Fred?
No.
Oh, I thought.
The little dog had a torn ACL?
He's like, and he couldn't, like, he barks a lot, right? So when he's in pain or discomfort, like the other night, he doesn't bark at all. That's one of the signs that he's not doing well. So he had torn the ACL, and this clinic that I was going to at the time, like, yeah, we're going to send you to a specialist. I'm like, I'm not sure we're going to be able to do a specialist here. So I went to this other vet that was over, oh gosh, it was in De Pere, right at 141 and Clayton. And they're like, well, one thing we can try is we can try this laser therapy. And he had to wear these, I think they call them doggles. He had to wear these goggles so he wouldn't be blinded by the laser therapy. I think I got like 5 sessions of the laser therapy. By the 3rd session, he was perfectly fine.
Good.
And I thought we were facing, and by the way, surgery was probably not going to become an option. So he's had a couple of comebacks from the IR in the past. All right, we're off and running here. Boccia.
Real quick, I feel the need to say this. In light of recent events, I am hydrated, in good health.
Good.
And if something were to happen to me, know that it's not because of that. Fred, I want to make sure you know that. Okay.
I will
Thank
not
you.
Put you down.
Thank you.
Unnecessarily. Bachyangar Sargonis.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up. Sue, you know how we have this pattern that has emerged from the Reardon Roundtable? We have 5 members, 5 panelists who've gone to federal prison from the Roundtable. Kind of an unusual situation, right? We're always on the lookout for that. There's another pattern that's emerging here from the Mark Reardon Show. If you're a guest on the Mark Reardon Show, you go on to big things.
That's true.
Big, huge things. Scott Jennings, what's he got now? A syndicated radio show. He's more popular than ever. Cut his teeth, basically, on this show, right?
Of course.
My next guest, Bachyangar Sargon. Now she's a big TV star. Big, fancy TV star. Surprised she could come on the radio with me this afternoon. How are you, Bachya?
I'm so pleased to be here with you, Mark. Thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry it's been a while. I believe I only turned down one invitation, though. So, you know.
No, one thing.
The invites.
Yeah, one thing I should tell you is that I was out for a while with some health issues over the summer, so it's been a while
we
have caught. Everything's fine. I'm good now, but I had about 2 months that I was not on the radio. So some of it was that we weren't connecting with you that way. But yeah, you got a new, before we talk about some of these issues, you're on News Nation. The show is called Bachya. Tell us about it.
It's actually called Bachya exclamation point.
Oh,
Mark.
I messed it up. Darn it. I blame Fred for that.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. It airs Saturday at 4 p.m. and 11 p.m. We record it on Fridays. We're just having such a great time. We've had Megyn Kelly, and we've had Howard Lutnick. We've had Dr. Oz last week, and then we have a panel with a liberal and a conservative. We talk about media fails, all the news of the week, and I open it with a little editorial monologue in which I talk about what we've learned about America last week, and that's been just really gratifying and, you know, creating an audience. And it's truly, you know, this isn't something I even realized I could, like, pray for or dream of for myself, so it's a little bit overwhelming on that front, but I feel very grateful to God and to the audience and to News Nation for taking a chance on me.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, because we hooked up with you maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago. You always stood out as someone who was a great guest, and, you know, you get invited back when that happens. Aww. And other people felt the same way. And I like your perspective, because it's different, and you're not, for example, afraid, and I've seen this even in the last couple of weeks, you're not afraid to, you know, break bad on RFK Jr. or Trump or call them out when needed. And I appreciate that as someone who also tries to do that, you know, when necessary.
I really appreciate that. I have to say, the, like, MAHA movement is, it's the closest the pushback against me has come since I, like, defected from the left. Like, when I was on the left, the pushback you got from leftists was just, like, ridiculously brutal, personal, nasty, cruel, mean. And, like, it's kind of like, you know, when you say, like, oh, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't be making mothers, like, feel like it's their fault if their child has autism, or I don't know, maybe we shouldn't be saying without any evidence that, like, vaccines cause autism. They get really, really, really mad. But like you said, it's so important to me to keep my independence. I was, you know, put on this planet to tell the truth, and I can't, I might be wrong about that, of course. Like, I bring a lot of humility to my journalism, but as far as I can tell, I'm not wrong about this. And I do think that, you know, what Trump did last week, for example, with Pfizer, working really hard to bring down the cost of drugs for average Americans, like, that is amazing.
Like, yeah.
That is huge. That is Trump once again stealing a Democrat issue out from under their noses because they're too busy thinking about themselves to actually take care of working class Americans. So I want to push in that direction, like, full steam ahead on the healthcare stuff in that arena, and a little bit less with the, you know, vaccine skepticism.
So let's talk about the media overall, because this Barry Weiss, Paramount CBS story, I'm going to talk about a little bit more in the show a little later. I talked about it last week. This is huge. This is so big. Now, I don't know, maybe I should say the potential is huge for Barry. So she leaves the New York Times years ago. She creates the Free Press. I love the FP. I've subscribed for a while. You've been published in the FP, if I'm not, you know, mistaken. So Paramount buys that, but also puts her in charge in an editorial decision-making position at CBS News. There could be, again, I better say potential, huge implications to the media landscape because of this deal. Don't you think, Batya?
100%. I have to start by saying I'm totally not objective. I'm a columnist at the Free Press. You know, I've met Barry, you know, on multiple occasions, and, I, you know, she's my boss at the Free Press, so I'm totally, totally not objective. But I do think it's really a shot across the bow to the mainstream media. It's so cool that somebody could have started something on their own, something scrappy and startup-y, and then from that perch really transform the mainstream itself, the institutions that are really failing us as Americans. So I think it's really exciting, and I wish her all the best.
Yeah, the content on the Free Press is unique, and I have a lot of guests who are columnists, and I love the way that they present the stories. But, you know, going back to what might happen at CBS, I mentioned this in the opening, you know, there are people out there that are saying, oh, the CBS staffers are nervous. They hope that they don't do anything with the big shows like 60 Minutes. My position would be, oh, maybe we should start with 60 Minutes, because a lot of us trust the reporting on that show, and sometimes we shouldn't. And look, Barry is no conservative, right? She's a lefty, and she's going to, you know, not necessarily tip things in the other direction, which is not what we're expecting, but make things a little bit more fair. Look at these stories where there's things, especially on the women's sports front, that would be one that jumps out at me, that they seem to be verboten from saying, or they're unwilling to say. And if they do, they get called out by their fellow employees. That's where I think some of this is going to stop, because I think that maybe Barry can manage that newsroom in a different way, maybe in a more unique way than any newsroom in television has ever been managed.
It's so funny that people cast her as a conservative, because, of course, you're completely right. She's a liberal. But she will be able to say, okay, where do we get the MAGA conservative to give the perspective that 60% of the nation has on this issue or that issue, right? and not just allow them to get away with giving the kind of, you know, Democratic talking points pablum that have really been the defining feature of most of the mainstream media in America today.
Well, I think you've addressed this on your TV show. Let's talk about the shutdown here a little bit. I heard John Kennedy, Senator Kennedy, he's one of my favorites. He said his prediction would last probably another week. I thought maybe later this week this thing would be taken care of, and maybe it will. But this argument over whether or not illegals are getting tax money for their health care, I think you popped off on that, didn't you?
Yeah, we actually had Dr. Oz on, and I asked him this exact question. I said, look, Democrats are saying the shutdown is about, you know, ACA credits, about keeping premiums low for working class Americans on their health care. Republicans are saying, no, it's about keeping illegals off of, you know, the Medicaid rolls, off of being able to access government-funded health care. The Democrats say, well, it is already illegal for illegal aliens to access Medicaid or government-funded health care. And so they accuse the Republicans of lying. But of course, that is not true. Of course, illegal aliens are accessing government health care. First of all, there's a Reagan-era law that says that anybody who walks into an emergency room has to be seen. So that's like already they're lying, because we know that that is not the case. But what the Republicans undid with the Big Beautiful Bill was states like California were giving illegal migrants not just, you know, the basic, you walk in, you have a broken arm, okay, we're not going to let you die in the street, but they were giving them access to, you know, dental care and vision and all sorts of things that the average American, even the average American who's on Medicare, does not get access to. So imagine you're a 65-year-old American, you've retired, you worked your whole life, you know, putting money into the system, and you get the bare bones. You know, if you don't get Medicare Advantage, you're not going to get dental. And then you go to the hospital and you see people who came here illegally, broke our laws, and they're getting access to a higher quality health care than you are. It's utterly, utterly infuriating. It is so deeply unfair. And I think that this is such an obvious, obvious point. So I think both sides are waiting for the other side to sort of blink. But to me, it seems like Trump really has all the cards here, especially because you have someone like Ross Boat, who, like, this is a guy, Mark, who I believe it was, you know, in the fourth grade, he wrote a paper about what he would do in the event of a government shutdown. And his answer he would fire, I promise you this is true, hundreds and thousands of people. For the Democrats not to know that about this guy, like not to be like, well, we better not shut down the government because this dude has been waiting since he was 8 years old for an opportunity like this. It was really bad planning.
That's unbelievable. Bacha Angarsargan, she is the host of the new show, Bacha, with an exclamation point. We have to say that. Bacha! It's 3 p.m., 10 p.m. Central on News Nation. I know you gave a shout-out to Lucky Vittert. He's got some St. Louis connections. He's from here, you know. And he cut his teeth over on my former station, KMOX. So I had Lucky on last week.
I owe my entire career to him.
Really?
Yeah, I would never have gotten this job. He saw me on Fox News after my first book came out in 2021, and he started having me on every week. And when he took the first vacation of his entire, you know, I think it was probably 10 years, he asked me to anchor his show. And I did that for a week, and it was incredible. And that's where
my show
grew out of. So he really, I am beyond, beyond, beyond grateful to Leland Vittert. Everyone should watch his show at 9 p.m. He is the fairest journalist in America, and that is the fairest show on television.
Yeah, and he'll probably be a guest this week because we, when we connected a couple of weeks ago, he's more than willing to come on. But we were talking about the book, and the book is fantastic. Bacha, thank you so much. That's great to know about
thank
Leland and the connection.
So much.
Take care. We'll see you.
Yes.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wow, what the hell is going on with the media? You have the Barry Weiss CBS story. Then listen to this. Kristen Welker, Meet the Press, NBC News, actually asking like a decent question here.
But let me ask you, because you say this is a Republican shutdown, but it's Democratic senators who are withholding their votes on what is called a clean resolution. That means no strings attached, which is something, quite frankly, Leader, that you and other Democrats have advocated for in the past. Take a look.
You do not use the threat of shutting down government to try to advance your policy agenda.
First thing that the House has to do is pass a clean six-week CR.
A continuing resolution that is at the fiscal year 2023 levels is the only way forward.
So she plays in the actual audio, and, you know, I think that's rare, certainly in the legacy media. Richard Stern is here. He's a Heritage Scholar and expert on fiscal policy. We're going to talk about the shutdown a little bit. And then somebody brought this to my attention last week. Rand Paul has this six-penny plan to balance the budget in 5 years, and I was unfamiliar with that plan. But Richard's coming on with us this afternoon to talk about all this. How are you, Richard Stern? Thanks for coming on 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on today.
What is your overall perspective of where we are here on this, you know, this stalemate and the shutdown? It doesn't seem like through the weekend nothing has emerged to help the Democrats in their corner. I don't see how they get out of this, you know, with their demands having any success. I think it's probably going to be a relatively short shutdown. But again, I don't know how they get out of this. Your thoughts?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head there. Look, it's honestly a lunatic thing that elected Democrat leadership are putting forward. And I think that's why it's been so hard for most people to have a real handle on exactly how long this will be, because, you know, usually you're used to rational actors who have real asks that make real sense. But, you know, literally elected Democrat leadership are shutting down the government because what they want to do is give $1.5 trillion of welfare to illegal aliens. Now, not all of it will go to them, but they want it to be available to them. And of course, the rest of that is more to the national debt and more inflation that'll crush American families. So, you know, look, I think one of two things is going to break here. Either elected Democrat leadership are doing this to posture, and they're hoping that enough of their moderates finally break or solid, or they're hoping that they can get Republicans to come to the table and make a deal. But they don't seem like they're running out of steam at all right now.
Yeah, I mean, there was an indication. I saw something in the Wall Street Journal, I think, on Friday or one of the outlets that said that the Trump administration was open to, you know, having discussions about the subsidies. But I believe any of those discussions are going to happen after they reopen the government, right? So I don't know if it's something as simple as that to say, look, we're committed to having discussions on this. These expire in December. There seems to be a group that is less extreme, that Democrats I'm speaking of in the Senate, that might understand that this thing needs to be wrapped up sooner rather than later. So I don't know where they land, but let's get to Rand Paul's idea. Now, he always votes against the CR. He's very consistent that way. I played some audio last week. I appreciate his principled stance on the spending because it drives me crazy how much money that we spend. But he has this six-penny plan. Can you explain how this would work, and is there merit to this plan?
No, absolutely. So the six-penny plan would cut government spending by 6%, 6 cents out of every dollar every year for 10 years. And if you did that, you would finally get the budget in balance. And again, I want to remind everybody listening that every dollar that the government spends on deficit is a dollar that either comes at the expense of raising mortgage rates and small business loan rates or raising inflation. Those are the two main ways that the government finances deficit spending. So, you know, his plan would end that burden, would get the government back to a stable size, and remove that burden from American, not just families and prospective home buyers, but also from small business owners and large businesses looking to borrow money to expand operations and hire more people with good paying jobs and produce more goods and services for people. So that's why he's put it forward, because, you know, think of it this way. Democrat leadership are trying to add to the deficit, you know, but even if we just do business as normal, you'll still get more addition to the deficit and more of that inflation and interest rate burden. So, you know, that's why he votes against these. That's why he puts up the six-penny plan, is to showcase to the American public that, look, small cuts here aren't going to avoid bankruptcy and what the government has put down as a burden on the average American family.
I wish we could have a debate on this, like a national conversation about what this is all about and how we can do it and how, you know, when Washington media and politicians say cuts to programs, they're talking about just a reduction in spending. So the way this would work is you'd have spending at 94% of current levels with annual reductions, as you indicated, of 6%. Now, I guess when he first introduced this in 2018, he said, look, all you needed was a spending freeze. Well, now, you know, the skyrocketing interest costs, everything we did during COVID has put that out of reach. But again, this is Rand Paul out there. People kind of put him into this corner. Why could we not have more of a discussion about actually reducing the debt and deficit and doing it in a realistic way? Because it should be more than just, you know, someone saying, oh, yeah, Rand Paul's got this penny plan. What's that all about? Who else is talking about it?
So I wish we could. I'm with you on that. Here's, I think, the tragic reality, and this is the thing they don't talk about, right, is we're used to the idea that you either need to cut spending or raise taxes. And I think we all know that if you raise taxes, it just means that you're sapping from the economy, you're stealing more from people. But there's really a third way, and that's hyperinflation and hyper high interest rates. And so really what I've come to, and now I've been here for a while, I've been doing this, what you realize is a lot of the political interests who don't want the conversation, they would genuinely prefer hyperinflation to cutting spending or raising taxes. And so, you know, I think at the end of the day, that's actually part of why this conversation doesn't happen. Now, look, it's easy to promise free government benefits and make it seem like you won't pay the bill for that. And I think a lot of that perpetuates all of this and means that people don't think they need to have the conversation. But it's the confluence of the two, right? It's this group of people who genuinely would prefer hyperinflation over seeing their benefits cut. And it's this other group of people who lie and promise the American public free stuff from the government without people understanding that you'll pay the bill eventually anyway. And I think it's between those two things. That's why we can't have a real conversation about it.
Okay, and I'm a little confused. It was like maybe, I don't know if we technically went through hyperinflation in the last few years. It seems like we did. But why would they favor that? Because they favor more government spending?
Yeah, so and I would say, think of what happened during COVID. So we had a 20% spike. That was kind of micro hyperinflation. If you were going to try to get rid of the entire value of the debt through inflation, it would be much, much, much worse. But think of it this way. So, you know, there are people who get benefits from the government that are inflation adjusted. And so the government will always ensure, and that, I mean, some of that's welfare benefits, but a lot of it is industrial subsidies and tax breaks for this business over that business. But almost all of those are inflation adjusted. Mm-hmm. So look, inflation could be a gajillion percent, and those people would still get the real value from the government that the government had to steal from somebody else. And I think if you walk through a lot of these programs and all these things, you keep coming back to that same story and that same gap between the special interests and the American public.
That makes a lot more sense, explaining it that way. Richard Stern, awesome to have you on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me on. Yeah. Definitely a pleasure.
Have a great week. You know, this whole thing with ICE enforcement agents and Chicago police has taken a little bit of a turn this afternoon. So in case you're not aware of what happened, so there was something. This happened during the daytime on Saturday, where there were these protests out there in Chicago. Some of it got a little nasty. I don't know if you want to call it a riot, but there were a lot of people that were yelling at the ICE officers, trying to smash things into their cars. I mean, it's completely out of control. But at one point, you had actual... Now, this is where it gets a little cloudy, right? ICE has accused police commanders in Chicago of putting them at risk after it's been reported that officers had been instructed to not answer a call for backup for federal agents who said that they were surrounded by protesters on Saturday. Now, there's a guy who is the superintendent of the Chicago Police Department who came out today and said, no, none of this is true. There's nuance to it. I haven't heard the whole tape, blah, blah, blah. I'm going to have some more tomorrow. But this is actually pretty interesting. And I think that, I don't know if he's called, I guess we'll just say Superintendent Snelling. I'll have his response in a second. But have you heard the dispatch radio stuff, Sue? Okay, so this is interesting because, the one thing I will say as a little bit of a precursor here is the superintendent seemed to indicate that maybe there were two different incidents. But you'll hear very specifically here that the command patrol called officers off and said, don't go to this area. So this is not edited. This is the conversation that happened on Saturday afternoon. And what's going on here, in my opinion, is there's like a missing half hour or 40 minutes where you don't know exactly what's happening and someone's not telling the truth. All right. So it's pretty clear here, either Snelling and the cops are lying or, you know, the FOP, the Fraternal Order of Police, they think the command is lying. I don't know if the command is saying that anyone's lying, but here's what it said with the dispatcher.
Any kind of particular hairstyle, just younger, male, Hispanic, on foot, wearing all black?
No hairstyle.
Okay, 10-4. And one is for the hit and run. This guy fled from the scene at 37th Place in Kedzie. It all occurred started at I-55 in Kedzie. Then they fled southbound at Kedzie, where that offending vehicle crashed. They ran the federal agent off the road. They fled on foot westbound 37th Place from Kedzie. It was a male Hispanic younger wearing all black clothing. 99?
Yeah, send the cars in that direction. Have them stay put two or three blocks away, all right?
All right, so let me stop right there. And the way that this is being described today is, and you can hear that commanding officer say, all right, have them send it, but keep them a few blocks away. Because what Snelling was saying today, and you'll hear some of this, is that, well, you know, they have basically their responsibility, and we have our responsibility. They have different standard operating procedures, etc. And also, they have this little thing in Chicago where they will not, they have two laws in Illinois and one in Chicago that says we will not help federal agents. We will not help ICE. Yeah, this is what they do. All right, so the call goes on. The cop says, okay, kind of keep them three blocks away.
Have them hold tight until I give you further direction, please.
Okay, 10-4, MPD is responding to 39th Place in Kedzie per 999. If you guys can just... So the unit's responding to 39th and Place in Kedzie. If you guys can start heading there as quick as you can, and then just hold tight for instructions with 999.
So the chief of patrol, clear everybody up. We're not responding over there.
Radio check. And again, per the chief of patrol, we have all the units that per 999. Chief of Patrol said all units clear out from there. We're not sending anybody over to that location.
62, we're going to clear out as soon as we can. Squad, we're like locked in over here, so yeah. We're going to do the best we can to get out of here as soon as we can.
So they're basically telling them we're not going in. Now, look, what I heard there is... there was an incident at 37th in Kedzie and one at 39th in Kedzie. And I think what I heard the superintendent say is that those two incidents are being conflated. But in both situations, the cops are essentially being ordered to stand down. And you hear the one officer at the end say, yeah, you know, we'd like to get out of here, but we're surrounded as well. So here's what the superintendent says earlier.
At any time on Saturday, were CPD officers told by dispatchers to stand down?
Well, I don't know about them being told by dispatchers. There was some communication between boots on the ground, a supervisor, and the chief of patrol.
So all right, so just real quick here, this news conference took place about 2 hours ago. This audio has been out there all weekend, right? At least from yesterday. I've seen it out there in the X. So if, you know, Superintendent Snelling has not listened to the audio, I'm shocked. I really am. And it's pretty much the question by that reporter, pretty accurate, right? I mean, I just played it to you. They said stand down, essentially.
There was some communication by phone. There was something that was put out there that there was an internal message that came from the chief of patrol. That is absolutely not true. There is no internal message. There was a phone conversation. I'm not sure until we get to our after action, all of the exact language that was there. But I have had a conversation with the chief of patrol who was concerned about officers showing up on the scene. The chief of patrol at that time had no information that anyone was in danger. And let me just be clear about one other thing when it comes to these federal agents. These federal agents can handle themselves.
I mean, I would have no doubt that they can handle themselves, but you know, there's a difference between that and being in the middle of a group of people and saying, hey, we can use a little assist here, right?
All right, we've been out there and we've seen it. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to leave them because we know that they can handle themselves. We need to make sure that we have our officers and enough of them to respond to a scene if they are being surrounded. So were they told to stand down? Our officers were not told to stand down. Our officers were out there throughout the entire event. I would never tell our officers to stand down because if our officers were in trouble and we needed help from other officers, I would expect those officers to step in and help us. And it's the same thing that we do on our side. When someone is in trouble, we're going to step in.
Okay. Well, you would hope that's the case. But let me tell you something. The stories don't match up. Here's the guy from the FOP.
Somebody's lying here, whether it's the chief of patrol or unit 999. And I could tell you, I personally know that lieutenant, and he has an impeccable record. On the other hand, the chief of patrol, not so much. He has been notorious for lying and stomping on anybody to get to where he's gotten to this point.
Wow.
So I think he gave that order. Absolutely. And I think the lieutenant was just relaying what that phone call reiterated to him to not send anybody over there, because sadly, this department is in literally a shell of itself and so fearful of what politicians and this mayor are going to do to them if they respond.
See, that's just ridiculous. And, you know, he's talking about Brandon Johnson and J.B. Pritzker, and that would really be a shame. Now, look, the audio's out there. You have the evidence of the superintendent saying, we didn't say that. You did say it. Okay, it's on audio. So what happened between the 41 minutes between that communication and when, you know, the next incident happened? That's the mystery here, and hopefully it'll be solved.
Get more at 971talk.com.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.